Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans out there, not just in Canada, but around the world. If you're hearing my voice, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. As always, with every episode, let's start off with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. Starting off with something that I had predicted earlier this season and part of last season, the cost cap and the cost of parts, the cost of labor, and this ever-evolving F1 landscape. Logan Sargeant for this weekend's race in Monaco, he will not be sporting the 2024 rear wing. He will unfortunately be using Williams 2023 wing just because they can't afford to make new parts. They don't have enough parts with them in Monaco to put not even an upgraded kit, but just a recent car kit with both drivers. Now, I had mentioned this earlier in the season and last season as well. I think we're starting to see the downfall of the cost of Formula One. The cost cap has been brought down to level of the playing field, which is fair. But what has unintentionally happened is that if you've got a smaller cost cap, but you can kind of work through old parts that you had before, it was grandfathered in. So any extra parts that you had, you could use in the next season and it wouldn't cost against you when it came to your cost cap. The only thing it would cost you extra, obviously, would be, you know, shipping and freight to move it from race to race. Well, not all teams would be able to do this. Williams now is the perfect example. They've gone through so many parts, and it takes so long to create these intricate pieces for each car that now their drivers are starting to suffer for it. Will they be able to catch up? I mean, last I read, it takes a couple of weeks just to create a part for the car. It's not like they can just go back into the shop, they've got 15 extras, they grab one and go, or like, hey, we need a week and here's our order, we need a new wing for Logan Sargeant from Monaco. It doesn't take that short amount of time. It takes some time, it takes some effort. I mean, it's not exactly like it's wasted on a high-end driver, and I know that's really harsh to say, but when you look at the season that Logan Sargeant's having this year compared to last year, like it would be a part wasted on Logan Sargeant is what I'm saying. And I'm trying to be as nice about it as humanly possible. If you're going to use your 2024 parts, put them on Alex Albon. He's got better track time. He's got better speed. He's got better consistency. He's got more experience. Yes, he's also been in Formula One longer than Logan Sargeant, but it's a safer bet that when you give the parts to Alex Albon, he will use them more appropriately and he's not going to hit the wall or destroy the car and just, you know, kind of mess up your inventory list even more. So, Logan Sargeant, 2023 wing for Monaco this year. Will it affect his race? Yeah, probably not. In all honesty, yeah, probably not. Moving on, next thing. F1 former chief technical officer has officially signed with Andretti Cadillac F1. He will be taking his new position after his gardening leave is over. Now, for those of you who don't know what a gardening leave is, essentially it is a forced year off from Formula One. You are away from the entire organization. You are away from all the teams, the directors, engineers, drivers, everybody. You are supposed to go home and garden. So the reason for this is because Formula One is such a tight-knit group that everybody knows everybody. And to a certain extent, everybody knows the technical advancements and where the cars are going for every single team. People talk, they make friends, so on and so forth. So what a gardening leave does is that if you're going, let's say, from Red Bull to Ferrari, okay, so you get a gardening leave, so that means you miss every single technical advancement from the car from one team to the next. You don't know what Ferrari's doing. You don't know what Red Bull's doing. So when you come back to your new position, you're not unintentionally or intentionally, depending on the type of person you are, you're not giving classified information from one team to the next. It would create an unfair advantage. It's also intellectual property that you would be sharing that is definitely, definitely not allowed. So the former chief technical officer, he's taking a year off, and that way the rules will change, people will upgrade, people will move on, and he won't have any additional inside information or intellectual property that he would be able to give to Cadillac Andretti. I think it's just a good idea all around for the industry. Now, with this announcement, it's another massive step from Andretti tilting his nose up in the face of the FIA and Formula One, going, okay, one of you said I can play, one of you said I can't play, I'm playing no matter what. He's putting every single duck in a row, and there's no denying him at this point. He's got the facilities built. He's got the employees hired. He's got, you know, renderings and demos and aerodynamic models built up. Like, he is ready to go. Now, with the addition of this technical officer, he's now starting to hire the big boys, where there's no way they can come back and go, you're not ready for F1. He will have the development. He will have the staff. He's getting the senior staff in place. There's nothing the FIA and Formula One can do about this now. I think it's just going to be a matter of time where they either bend the knee and finally say, okay, Andretti's in, whatever year, 2025, 2026, whatever the case may be, or he's just going to be so bullish and he's just going to, I'm starting. I will have a car. It will be at, call it Abu Dhabi. We're going to start this season right here, right now. Or he's just going to show up to the first race of, call it the 2025 season. He's just going to show up. And what are they going to do? They're going to tell him no. They would try, but I think they'd lose a lot of fans. They'd lose a lot of sponsorship, and it would just be a really big black eye for Formula One to say no to a team that it's 50-50. Either if you're fully pregnant or you're not. And in this case, he's in that limbo, so he's just getting his duck set, and he will just appear one day on the grid ready to go. And that's it for Hot Topics from last week to this week. Not a whole lot going on. Let's just head right into qualifying. That's right, we're in Monaco. This is, if you're familiar with this track, either you love it or you hate it. The weather is either you love it or you hate it. In this case, this weekend, the weather in Monaco is absolutely perfect. No rain, no wind, no exterior circumstances to wreck the race or to make anything a little more interesting than it needed to be. Right off the bats again this week, McLaren is looking super, super fast again. They no brand new parts to the car. They've got some track-specific parts, which a lot of the teams are doing every year, so I'm not going to go through them. Just every team on the grid, they always bring very specific Monaco pieces with them. This is a very technical track. It's not the fastest track in the world. It's very technical. It's hard on the, not necessarily the tires. You can literally go an entire race on one set of tires just because they end up repaving and resurfacing Monaco because it is a street track every 2 years anyways. So it's always, you know, up to date and in good condition that way. What's really hard on the cars is the suspension and the turning radiuses and just a lot of G forces and a lot of really tight corners that has a tendency to, you know, wreck some front ends. So each team generally brings their own track specific modifications, which obviously hopefully gives them the best chance of winning Monaco Grand Prix. Traffic problems, as always, in qualifying. You've got 20 cars on this grid. They're trying to go as fast as they possibly can. Some guys are warming up. Some guys are going, you know, hell-bent for election, as the expression goes. A lot of unintentional impeding. No penalties because of it. It's just traffic jams. That's the way this course is designed. It's very technical. It's very, very tight. You got to be paying attention from start to finish. Perez, another weekend where he is struggling to keep pace. From beginning of Q1 to the end of Q1, he's not looking enthusiastic. He's not looking like he's going to be able to do anything this weekend. It's not for the lack of trying. You can see him trying to get that car in the right place. Just this season, the RB20 has been giving him a lot more issues than the RB19 from previous years, you know, the 19, 18, and 17. He's struggling. Now you go to Monaco. It's a technical track. It's a slower track. You don't need to defend. There's nowhere to pass in this track. It's just not a race set up for the success of Checo Perez. And you could definitely see that this weekend, even from full practice 1, 2, and 3, it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't amazing. He wasn't setting any kind of records, you know, at all. So unfortunately for him, it's not going to be a great weekend for him. It's not going to be a great weekend for a lot of racers just because it's Monaco. So bottom five, absolutely no drama in Q1. So bottom five from 16th to 20th. In order, 16th, Fernando Alonso, 17th, Logan Sargeant, 18th, Checo Perez, Bottas in 19th, Joe Guan Yu in 20th. Two big names out in Q1, Fernando Alonso and Checo Perez. Both of these guys know what they're doing. Both guys are fighting with their cars. both drivers not exactly the best history in Monaco. They don't have the winningest track record. They've also come out to say it's a historic track. That's what everybody says. You like this track? Do you hate this track? Well, it's a very historic track. It needs to be on the F1 calendar. They're very political, whether they like to say they like it or not. As you can tell in these qualifying times and qualifying positions, I don't think they like it this weekend. Moving straight into Q2, a lot of the same. Still, the weather's still great. We're down 5 cars, which just gives them a little bit more speed. Not nearly as much traffic impeding or slowing down because of cars in the way, which is great. There's a lot of blind corners in Monaco. There's a lot of spots where you cannot stop or slow down. It's just way too dangerous, especially in that tunnel section. You just can't do it. A lot of guys that are out from 11th to 15th, it's going to be the same. It's going to be the same old, same old. A couple of cars that have qualifying panache, not making it out of Q2 this time. Nico Hülkenberg, especially one of them. He's got really good qualifying speed. He's got that one lap speed down to a T. Just not making it today. Danny Ric, same thing. He's on a roll. He's doing very, very well in the V car. Again, just not his weekend. He just couldn't pull it together. Fighting the car around the corners a little bit. Just can't find that top speed. Can't find the flow, essentially, is what you need to have when it comes to Monaco. Because it's such a tight course, because there's no forgiveness, you got to find that ebb and flow in the corner, gearing up, gearing down, taking some 90-degree turns. You know, you just got to find that nice, easy flow. That will lead you to victory. It'll also lead you to a fast track time. Except for these bottom 5 guys, or the next 5, they just couldn't quite find their flow. From 11th to 15th, we got Esteban Ocon, Nico Hülkenberg in 12th, Daniel Ricciardo in 13th, Lance Stroll in 14th, and then Kevin Magnussen in 15th. Again, not unusual to find where these guys are sitting. You know, they're not the fastest guys in the world, but, you know, you do what you can in Monaco. Rolling right into Q3, top 10. There's a couple notable names and a couple notable performances. Alex Albon really, really putting that car together in Monaco. He has more of that technical panache than the bottom 15. He felt and it looked like he was in the zone. Does he have the best car and the fastest car? No, not particularly, but you can tell he's in the zone. He's milking that car for everything that you can possibly get. And again, I'm going to bring this up a lot today. Around this track, you need to find that flow. You need to find that harmony with your car. You need to find it fast. And with Albon doing what he can in the Williams, really, really good position for him. Obviously, he makes it into the top 10. Would he like to be a little bit higher? Yeah, absolutely. But in Monaco, you want to qualify as high as you possibly can just because, again, the way the track layout is, there's one spot to pass. It's like 500 meters, and that is it. So where you qualify is essentially where you're going to finish up. Great speed from Mercedes this weekend. They're really starting to bring it into their own. Again, they make it into the top 10, one driver in the top 5. Besides that, I mean, they're putting it together on the tracks that nobody really likes, but they don't want to say it. We're going to go through the top 10, and then we're going to talk about it for a few seconds. So here's the top 10, starting from 1st to 10th. 1st, Charles Leclerc. 2nd, Oscar Piastri. 3rd, Carlos Sainz. Norris is in 4th. Russell's in 5th. Verstappen's in 6th. Hamilton 7th. Yuki Tsunoda in 8th. Alex Albon in 9th. And Pierre Gasly in 10th. Let's talk about this top 10. Let's talk about how, through no fault of his own, he just couldn't keep up this weekend. The car is not exactly in the right spot where he needs it. And he has been fighting the car a little bit. Max Verstappen is in 6th, getting visibly and easily outqualified by both Ferrari and McLaren drivers. Now, is the RB20 going in the right direction? Or are they starting to falter a little bit or not paying attention so much with Adrian Newey leaving? I don't think it's going to be the latter. I think it's more along the lines of the RB20 is where it's at its max. It's at its ceiling. It's at its peak. Now, McLaren brought out very new upgrades last race. Very, very effective. Ferrari bringing out new upgrades with purpose, and they seem to be working out the way they needed them to and much better than they thought they would. As well as Ferrari has a really good history in Monaco. They know the track very, very well. They have the most, you know, wins and the best win ratio in Monaco. So it just kind of it makes sense that those two teams are at the top. George Russell, all of a sudden, Mercedes knows how to drive on a technical track. What's happening here? we are seeing, in my opinion, the official swing when it comes to car dominance in the 2024 season. Red Bull, unless they're hiding some massive upgrade that we haven't seen yet, some absolute out-of-the-box, don't-waste-it-on-a-track-like-Monaco kind of upgrade, they need to figure something out now. They're getting caught. They're getting beat quite soundly when it comes to qualifying on a track like this. Last week, Max got pole. Okay, that's great. He did a really good qualifying session, but he's not nearly as far ahead as everybody thought he would be at this point. And especially for this season, they need the points sooner rather than later because it's such a long season. I don't see them running away with the championship the further the season goes. I see Red Bull having to hang on more than take the lead this season. It's going to be close. And when you see the upgrades and the times that Leclerc and Piastri and Sainz and Norris are putting in, it's astonishing. It's going to be one of those seasons where you're going to see Max qualify probably fifth and sixth a little bit more often starting from here on out. But through the entire weekend, you can see Max is not really happy where the car is. And he's pulling out every trick that he possibly can. So we all know when it comes to Monaco, and I'm going to say this again, that wherever you qualify is wherever you finish. But at the same time, in the same breath, in the same thought, Max also does not have an issue at all passing where there is no need to pass or you didn't know you could pass there. So now the ultimate question is, can the three-time world champion make up spots from sixth to challenge for the championship and for the win in Monaco, or is he going to get stuck where he is? And with that being said, it is officially time. It is the thing that everyone has been waiting for. It is race day officially in Monaco. We are talking 19 turns, 78 laps, a course distance of 3.34 kilometers, which is why you're hitting 78 laps. It's a short course. You got to make up that course somehow or that distance somehow. So you're putting in the laps. Top speed of 293.5 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap 2021, Lewis Hamilton with a 1:12. They were 2 seconds off the pace today, so not exactly like super, super far behind, but not exactly setting world records either. And there was excitement slash drama even before the race started. Both Haas cars were disqualified from qualifying. There was technical stipulations, and they broke the rules on essentially how wide their DRS wing was allowed to open. There are parameters that you have to stay within. You cannot exceed them in any way, whether it's too small or too big. These guys went too big. They got caught in parc fermé, which is why you have the parc fermé. You're making sure that everybody's playing by the same rules. So both Nico Hülkenberg and Kevin Magnussen, they both got disqualified from the qualifying, not the race, but just qualifying. So that means wherever they were placed, they get knocked out and they are doing official pit lane start. And that's very important to remember. Both Haas's pit lane start. The race itself in Monaco at the start can be very, very hectic, especially at the beginning, because you've got a 500 meter dash to the first corner. And if you're going to make a move, it's got to be off the start. If you're going to make any kind of places up, it's got to be off the start. If you have a bad start, you're going to go from first to seventh and you're just going to stay there. It's so easy to lose spots in Monaco and not be able to gain them back. This track is also a one pit stop kind of race because of the way the tarmac is laid down and essentially for how smooth this race is. It takes absolutely no degradation out of the tires whatsoever. You can run all 78 laps on a pair of hards, no problem whatsoever. But F1 rules state that you do have to have at least one pit stop and you have to change at least one compound of tire. So as far as I could see, 90% of the grid, they're all starting on mediums. Mediums are a little bit stickier. You get a little bit better takeoff, which makes sense when it comes to a standing start. So most of these guys are on mediums. And, you know, it's one of those races where there's a 57% chance over the history of Monaco that there's going to be either a safety car or a red flag. Normally, that does happen either at the end of the race or at the beginning of the race. The middle of the race, these guys are in their flow. They're paying attention. They're not tired yet. Well, This is one race that absolutely held up to the statistics. They made it officially 500 meters down the road before the first major, and I mean major crash, taking out four cars. Three cars involved in the crash, one car unintentionally down the road in his own little world also gets taken out. Let's get right into it. Five lights out, away we go. Really good, clean start for the first 500 meters. Now, what happens? Checo Perez is in the middle of the street. He's in the middle of the road. The two cars behind him, they're the Haas cars coming out of pit lane. So they do have warmish tires, not as warm as everybody else, because they have to wait to be passed first before they can leave. So they don't exactly have the best grip. So picture this. Close your eyes. Picture this. Checo Perez is in the middle of the road coming up the up to the corner. Nico Hülkenberg is in the bottom left-hand corner. Kevin Magnussen is on the lower right, but he's coming up really fast. Checo's left just enough room where you know the space is going to disappear because the corner is going from left to right. So if you're in the right-hand side, if you're in that middle lane, you know it's going to get closed off because you're not going to make that corner. Well, Kevin Magnussen thought he would be able to make it. He goes up, and they're just hauling ass. You're going as fast as you can, seventh gear, full out. Kevin Magnussen comes up. He clips the back right tire of Checo Perez's car, takes him into the barrier, just crushes Perez's car. Like, there is nothing left. The wheels are bent. The wing is gone, front and back, side pot. Like, everything is gone. It's down to the actual monocoque and the chassis itself. That is it. Amongst all of this, it swings K-Mag out. He ends up clipping Nico Hülkenberg, who's trying to get past the collision. They're trying to get past. He's trying to get past all this mayhem and actually continue on with the race. He ends up getting clipped as well. Takes out both Haas and Red Bull in the first 500 meters. Massive, massive, massive red flag. 35-minute delay to clean up all three cars. There was carbon fiber everywhere. More importantly than that, well, all drivers were fine. Hülkenberg was pissed because it was just unintentional. It was useless. He didn't want to get caught in the accident, but he did. Both K-Mag and Perez were perfectly fine. Both super disappointed in what had happened. Perez just kind of staring at his car, just shockingly going, I wasn't having a great weekend, but what the fuck is this? Car is totally trashed. They're all done. Now, the fourth car out, I'm going to mention, further on down the road. So because of where the crash had happened, they're at the back of the pack. The only two cars behind them were Valtteri Bottas and Zhou Guanyu. They didn't get caught up. They were able to make it through. They needed to switch out some tires because they had to run over the debris just to get past them. So this initiates a safety car. But everybody ahead can still technically race because they're nowhere near, or it was a virtual safety car because they're nowhere near the actual incident themselves. Of course, the other incident that ends up happening, one car paying attention, one car just overshooting, absolutely no business doing what he was doing. Of course, it was the Alpines. Esteban Ocon ends up going super, super wide. He's behind Pierre Gasly. He ends up passing Gasly on the apex, but what he ends up doing is he misjudges the speed of Gasly, and they end up hitting. Because Ocon's got to hit the brakes or he's going to hit the wall, what he unintentionally does is he sends his own teammate up underneath his own car. So essentially, Gasly ends up hitting Ocon, taking Ocon up into the air, destroying the bottom of the car for Ocon. Massive slam down. He gets two, three more laps in. Then all of a sudden, Esteban Ocon is done for the day. The car is just trashed. Actually, it wasn't even two laps. At this point, the red flag had come out. Everybody has to go to the pit lane. At that point, Alpine was assessing the cars. Pierre Gasly gets a brand new wing. Esteban Ocon, he's done for the day. He destroyed his own car. Alpine is just imploding at this point. There was absolutely no reason for Esteban Ocon to be going that fast. They knew about the crash, and yet why would you do this to your own teammate? You're not going to make the corner. You're going in too fast. But instead of braking and losing a little bit of control but not hitting your partner or coming really close beside him, you decide to just take that corner as fast as you possibly can. You want to get ahead of him because you know the restart, you want that further position up. But instead, you end up taking yourself out of the race. There's absolutely no point to this. Alpine as a team, the race, not the race director, but the team director and all this, he's like, there was no reason for this. There will be a penalty for Ocon, not just a grid penalty from the FIA and Formula One, but there's going to be a team punishment as well. And I think that is totally deserved. There was no reason for him to go as far as he did, whether you call it a lack of judgment, whatever excuse Ocon gives, it's just useless. It's pointless. It's just taking your team further and further down. And the season isn't even halfway through yet. Like, I think you're a quarter of the way through. Maybe it's race 7 of 24. Like, come on, guys, pull your shit together. You've got all these investors. You got all these people that believe in you, and you're literally letting every single person down. Keeping in mind, both Alpine drivers do not have contracts for 2025. If they are to sign a driver again, I do believe that Gasly's going to come back. Esteban Ocon, he's done. He's done in Alpine. The way he's driving and for how much time they've got left, he is a detriment to the team, in my opinion. They need to swap him out for an Ollie Bearman. They need to swap him out for some F2 driver waiting in the wings to take over to get his shot. I think they need to do this sooner rather than later. They'll probably do it at the halfway mark of the season, which I think is going to be too late for the team itself. Give some young buck a chance. Give an F2 driver a chance to get in the car, modify. What's the worst thing you're going to do? Make some points in the second half of the season? You're not going to crash into your partner, that's for sure. So it's only an advantage to get rid of Ocon at this point. So 35 minutes later, and the race is back on officially. They're back in the grid spots. Track is totally clear. They had to fix the barrier because Perez hit it so hard. He moved the metal barrier, so they had that repair to do. Everything's good. Everything's brushed off. Five lights out again. Away we go. It's a standing restart, so everybody's got to do this all over again. It was a very, very clean start. It's amazing when you take out four cars, how much extra space there is for the rest of those 16. It was great. It was, it was a great race. Well, okay, let me rephrase that. It was a great start to the race. Clean, fast, and then after that, it was, I'm going to be honest with you, boring as fuck. I do not enjoy, personal opinion, I do not enjoy the Monaco Grand Prix specifically for this reason. Once the start went again, everybody had changed tires. So you're done. It's a red flag. You're allowed to change tires. That's their one pit stop. No one lost time. No one gained time. No one lost positions. No one gained positions. They stayed exactly where they were for 78 laps. 77 laps. 77 laps. They stayed in the exact same position. I know people say NASCAR is boring because they only go in one direction. Well, it's the old school NASCAR. And it's boring to watch, but at least there's passing. Monaco is boring. The track is intriguing. The track is very detailed and technical, which is great. But these guys have done this so many times. There's no one accidentally clipping a corner here and taking off the front of the car. The weather was great, which is fantastic for race day. But it just makes this race so boring and so long. It was like you can do something at home. Like if you're watching at home, you could go do the dishes, come back, they're in the exact same position because of the situation they were in. Now, if there wasn't a crash, there would be one pit stop. Ooh. So there would be five, six minutes of strategy. And then it's just watching them go around in the same direction, in the same position. Because the tire degradation is so low, you're not going to get someone with a blowout unless they hit a piece of carbon fiber or they hit, you know, any kind of debris on the track. You're not going to get a tire blowout due to degradation. You're not going to lose track time due to tire degradation, again, because the track is so smooth and these tires are so good. It was just a boring-ass race. So let's go straight to the top 10 and let's go to the finish. Fantastic news. Fantastic, fantastic news for Charles Leclerc. He is from Monaco. He is born in Monaco. He's only the second driver in Formula One history to be born in Monaco and win the Monaco Grand Prix. He ends up first, Oscar Piastri in second, Sainz in third, Norris in fourth, Russell in fifth, Max in sixth, Hamilton in seventh, Tsunoda in eighth, Albon in ninth, Gasly in tenth. Ta-da! Exactly the same finishing order as you did with qualifying. Congratulations to Leclerc. It was a massive, massive monkey off his back. It was super emotional for him. Very, very, very proud of him. And even though the race itself is boring as hell, he proved that he deserved to be on pole when it came to qualifying. He out-qualified everybody by substantial margins, even by F1 standards. He was on point the entire weekend. All of the practices, he was, if not at the top, he was near the top. It was just that perfect, perfect weekend. I'll call it a Disney weekend, where everything went exactly to plan and the good guy ended on top. He was the underdog coming into Monaco just because he's been on pole twice, but he's never won from pole before. He's got the Monaco curse. Well, Disney weekend, enter here, on pole, wins the race handily too. At one point, he was just, I don't want to call it coasting, but he really wasn't needing to try that hard, just he just needed to bring the car home. The nerves that from lap 70 to 78, it's that time frame where if something is going to go wrong, it's going to be right now. You concentrate even more the last eight laps. You slow down just that little bit more. You take those corners a little wider than you need to just to make sure that you're going to get first. So congratulations, Charles Leclerc absolutely deserves this win. It also brings in a little bit of difference and a little bit of pressure in the drivers' championship. Let's check out those points now. Max Verstappen is still in first with 169 points, but with this win, Leclerc is now second. Well, he's still in second, 138 points. Lando Norris is in third with 113. Carlos Sainz is in fourth with 108. Checo Perez is now in fifth, drops two spots with 107 points. Oscar Piastri is sixth with 71. Russell is seventh with 54. Hamilton is eighth with 42 points. Alex Albon is ninth with 33 points. And Yuki Tsunoda is holding down the 10th spot with 19 points. Constructors' Championships, nobody changes, but it's getting close now. Red Bull, 276 points. They're still in first. Ferrari is second with 252 points. McLaren is third with 184. Mercedes is fourth with 96. Aston Martin's in fifth with 44. V-Carb, whatever you want to call them, Visa Cash App, again, sixth with 24 points. Haas is in seventh with 7 points. Williams is in eighth with 2 points. Alpine with Gasly's last minute, well, not last minute, 10th spot, last point. They move up to ninth with 2 points. And then now it is officially just Kick Sauber, who has absolutely no points this season. Story of the race. Monaco needs to go. This is my story. And it's not that I hate Monaco. It's been around since 1950. They've done 70 plus races on this track. It's a very historical track. It really is. It's grandfathered in. And it's grandfathered in for a reason. It's because, in my opinion, when you look at the modern day F1 tracks, or even the stretch of tracks throughout season, Monaco is the most technical. That is given. That is 100% true. No doubt about it. Not taking that away from Monaco. But it is so technical that unless you're there, and this is coming from the drivers and it's coming from the commentators and all the reporters whom I wish to be there one day as well, that the atmosphere is fantastic and you can feel the history and it's electrifying and the course is fantastic. But they don't actually say the track is good for racing anymore. There's no passing. If there is, it's a 500 meter stretch that you have to line up perfectly before you can do anything. Besides that, it's literally how you qualify is where you finish. In my opinion, in modern F1, there is no place for Monaco anymore, at least the track they have now. If they are going to keep Monaco, in my opinion, they need to update the track somehow. They need to make it a little wider. They need to make it still as technical as you possibly can, but you need to make some spots where some things can happen besides just a driver losing concentration hitting the wall. That's not the reason why we watch F1. But where can you upgrade the track? How can you make it bigger? It's a street circuit. It's been the same street circuit since 1950s. Like, it's gotta be a realistic upgrade. Maybe they take 2-3 years away from Monaco. They upgrade the track. They take the first year and they re-engineer the entire track. Then they take the second year, they build and map out and make sure it's right. And then they bring it back for the third year. They give it a break. But it's got that streak where it's been around for so long. It's got so many races that everybody loves coming to Monaco. As a fan, as as a podcaster, and this is, I love to do this. I love to talk about tracks. I love to talk about drivers. This is the worst weekend of the entire calendar. I don't care what weather brings, what kind of circumstances there are, crashes, no crashes. If there's no crashes whatsoever and everything goes perfectly to plan, it is still the worst race on the calendar. Nothing ever happens. And I'm not saying that a crash needs to happen to make it exciting. I'm not saying there needs to be 500 overtakes for it to be exciting, but there needs to be something. To listen to the commentators on wherever you watch it, TSN or F1 TV, it's listening to them struggle trying to find something to talk about. They talk about, oh, the tire strategy and lap times and this and that. That can only go so far when nothing is happening. It's a strained weekend, in my opinion. It needs to take a break and it needs to be upgraded. If they can't upgrade Monaco or they're not willing to upgrade Monaco, I think they need to drop it altogether. Bring in a new updated track, or at least bring in another track from years past that has been updated, that is more exciting. Maybe you bring another race to Montreal. Maybe you add another race somewhere in Europe. I mean, just think outside the box, because just because it's grandfathered in, it's a classic, doesn't mean it's actually good. And with that, folks, that is the roundup on F101 for the Monaco Grand Prix. Next race, when are you looking at it? What are you looking at it? What's going to happen? It is the Canadian Grand Prix. It is June 9th, 7th to 9th weekend. It is a regular weekend. There is no sprint. So if you intend on watching full practice, it is Friday. First practice is at 11:30. Second practice is at 3 p.m. Saturday, full practice 3 is 10:30 in the morning. Qualifying is 2 p.m. And then we're talking race Sunday. The race is at noon on Sunday. Pre-qualifying show is at 11 o'clock. Post-race show is obviously 3 after the race. Montreal is a little bit more exciting. Again, I think it's one of those tracks that needs to be updated. It needs to be upgraded. It's nice to have a track in Canada. Doesn't necessarily mean we need to have a race in Canada, but we'll talk about more about that next week. But as always, I'd like to send a big thank you to everybody, all my listeners out there. Without you, F101 would not be around. And just remember, so until next time, keep those tires burning and that rubber turning. Talk to you guys next time.